I speak to you in the name of God. Amen. I knew immediately what the young man was going to say. He had come to the noon Eucharist often because he worked downtown and wanted spiritual nourishment in the middle of the day. Several days every week he appeared in his best lawyer's suit, and I came to know him and his pain. So when he came to my office, I knew why he was there. "I hate my job," he said, without any preliminaries. "It's a meaningless waste of my life, and I cannot do it anymore." Since he showed no evidence of being an irresponsible adventurer who might leave family and work and disappear into the future, I listened intently to his story. We talked about his desire to use his life well, to do something important, to live with integrity, and to have been a good steward of his life when its end approached. In the end, Michael found his way to a better job, better for him. He also discovered a calling to assist other people who woke up one day with the same dread and chilling sobriety about their lives. After a while, I did not see him anymore. Michael no longer worked downtown. But I've been thinking about him as we begin this fall, and as we slowly journey toward the altar on Ingathering Sunday in November to place our pledges of stewardship on the altar, my friend Michael has returned to my senses, and his dilemma seems distressingly familiar. I don't believe in reincarnation. I believe God has given each of us this one life and has called us to live in blessing, service, and love. And while I have been privileged to work in jobs that brought me great satisfaction and purpose for the most part, I have awakened sometimes over the years with a start and wondered what I shall have done when my life is over. I admit to having been a little ambitious over the years. I admit to having wanted to make a difference by my life. I admit to not wanting to be forgotten and unnoticed. And I admit to having felt both holy gratitude and ungodly sadness at the end of some days and some weeks and some years. And if you sat me down and said, "No more kidding, no more pretensions, nobody's listening, speak the truth, how should we live this life?" I would answer, life itself is a gift and a blessing. As Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut said on the night of his election to the United States Senate, "First, we must give thanks to God for the gift of life." Each one of us is formed from unique currents in the gene pool. And in each person, God has planted the seeds of a life different from all others. More than anything else in life, we are to care for those seeds and allow them to grow. At the other end of the journey, it will not be enough to have built bigger and bigger barns, as we heard a few weeks ago. It will matter that we have loved and cared for the life God has given us, and that our good stewardship will have gathered a harvest of blessing. That's what I would say. So in this early autumn, I want to speak to you about the stewardship of our lives, the rhythm and goodness of our days, and the character of our living. Somewhere between Jeremiah's potter's wheel and Luke's big stuffed barn, there's room for active acceptance of God's gift, and there's a summons to use it wisely. But travel with me into these two metaphors of the scriptures and try to imagine your life as it might be. The story we heard from Luke several weeks ago needs no commentary. The good farmer, wise in his husbandry, blessed with soil and rain, through no theft or graft or guile, receives a bumper crop. And the only thing he can think of to do with such abundance is to build a bigger barn. And having provided so richly for himself, he takes it easy. And for that, he is called a fool. And Jesus shines on the screen the moral of the story. So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God. My friend Michael found himself always needing a bigger barn until it didn't make sense. Do you ever think about spending down the bumper crop or handing on the blessing? Michael was 34 when he came to talk with me. And with a little sacrifice, he was able to change his job without catastrophe. But what if he had been 44 or 54 or 64? Then it's often too late, so it feels. And sometimes is. And against all desire, we cannot leave the meaningless job or tedious relationship or the daily waste. But this parable was only told as commentary on the charge, be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of possessions. But everybody comes home sometimes and collapses with the unhappy cry, that was a wasted day. And some of us are propelled through our days by the demands of 401k retirement accounts, or children needing help, or the mortgage to pay, or any other similar demand. So we spend our days feeling dislocated from our true selves, or stymied in our best hopes for living. Thank goodness for the potter's wheel. Contrary to the insistence of my youth group many years ago, Jeremiah was not a bullfrog. He was a prophet of God, and he was neurotic, and he worried all the time about his calling, and he was assaulted from all sides. And Jeremiah spoke the word of the Lord with intense personal insistence and urgency. Jeremiah struggled with God all the time. He would have known exactly why my friend Michael was troubled. And along the way, as Jeremiah tried to offer promise and hope to the people of Jerusalem who were on the verge of being captives, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah and directed him to the potter's house. There he watched the potter spin the wheel and caress the clay and shape the vessel. But the vessel spoiled, and the potter reworked it into another vessel. And the potter could have done this again and again and again until the wheel and the fingers and the soul got it right. On Jeremiah's lips, this potter's tale sounded a warning to the people of Jerusalem. But you know, it spins a song of hope also. You see, I believe that within the range of God's mercy and grace, it is never too late. Within the range of God's mercy and grace, it is never too late. No matter how many times the hands slip and the wheel slows and the vessel is flawed, the clay is grasped again and thrown upon the wheel with as much joy as the stars were thrown upon the heavens. And it is never too late to grasp our lives and care for them. When I lived in the lovely neighborhood high on the bluff overlooking the Mississippi River in Illinois, my neighbor was a potter. He was Japanese, and his home and his kill were next door. One day I was wandering in the woods of the ravine that ran behind our houses, and I came upon a pile of broken Japanese pottery. It lay in fragments, gorgeous fragments, brightly colored, half hidden among the bushes. How sad, I thought. What a waste of good pottery. Until the day I finally went into Arthur's gallery downtown and saw the pieces he kept. And I realized that how many failed efforts lay behind the vases and pitchers and bowls that I saw. And then I discovered that Arthur had been a student in this country when World War II began, And for the crime of being Japanese, he was herded into a camp in the western wilderness where he languished until the war ended. And I wondered how often in that desolate place he had despaired of his life. How often he feared that he might never be the artist he longed to be. And for the first time in my life, I understood that waste is not always waste. On this early fall weekend, I won't try to tell you how to steward your life or how to honor God with your days and years, but won't you join me in letting each day be a blessing? And won't you rejoice with me that the potter's wheel continues to turn? Amen.